Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast, presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm your co-host, Bryce, as always, joined by my good buddy, Brendan, from across the country. Sir, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, at the time of recording this, we're getting some nice volatility back into the market, and we're enjoying it.
But man, I am so excited as well. And we're joined particularly by an exciting guest, somebody who's a markets expert, as well as a builder in the space, Satraj Brahmbra, the CEO of Rails. Satraj, thank you so much for joining us. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here.
Very, very excited. Are you, you're holding up with the volatile sort of market movements? You're holding up? You're not getting liquidated along with the other almost $2 billion of liquidations?
No. That's a long time away for me.
You're like, that's not me. I can't take any credit for that. Brendan, you're not part of that liquidation number, are you?
I'm not, but I was talking to TiVo about it this morning. I was like, I'm honestly impressed that we saw over $1.5 billion in long liquidations and Bitcoin only fell about 3% over that move. I was like, we've seen bigger than 3% moves with far less liquidations in the past. So I didn't partake, but I was actually pretty impressed with how well Bitcoin held up.
Yeah, no, I share the same sentiment there. But Satraj, we really would love to before we dive into Rails and all the amazing things you guys are doing for instant trade execution and really unmatched custody on chain, before we dive into that, I want to get acquainted with you and our audience. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be a builder in the space.
Yeah, so I'm a software engineer. That's my background. Got building into crypto a little early, I think when Ethereum came out. So Ethereum was sort of my gateway drug into crypto. I'm Canadian, so I just moved recently. But so Ethereum's a big deal. Comes from there, and that's how we sort of got acquainted with crypto. A lot of us actually. So not Bitcoin at all. For me, it was definitely Ethereum. Pretty and exciting sort of to see the whole thesis behind a decentralized computer and how it's programmable and the whole programmable money thing. So that's sort of what got me in the space. I also started trading it around the same time. So got all my hard lessons there. So and before then I was one of the first iOS developers in Canada. So I've been sort of caught the early mobile computing platform, then caught crypto early and sort of combined the two when we built BlockEQ, which was a decentralized exchange on Stellar in 2018. That was acquired in the same year it was created, and that's sort of my builder sort of flow into crypto. At after that, I run the largest crypto fund in Canada. It's called the Round 13 Digital Asset Fund. I manage the liquid portion, which has done pretty well from inception till now. And being a user in the space, you know, going through FTX, sort of got us into the whole thesis behind building Rails.
That sounds awesome. So you manage a liquid fund as well, Round 13. Tell us a little bit about that before we dive in a little bit deeper.
Yeah, so we raised the fund at the top of the last bull market. Very disciplined not to deploy any capital around then, with the interest rates kicking into high gear. Obviously didn't know that FTX was going to get completely decimated during that time, but ended up giving us phenomenal entries and that we've been basically riding since then.
So when you're going through all of this, I guess what came first which came first in terms of like order when you had Round 13 and Rails, and did one spark another?
Yeah. So I was in Round 13 obviously first, right in my passion because of the liquid fund. Uh-huh. I'm deploying capital all the time, getting in and out of positions. So just for context, that portion of the fund's up 5 or 6x. So it's returned the entire fund. So around 20% of the fund returned the entire fund over the same period of time. You're talking about like a $100 million plus fund. And it's all come from sort of buying in and out of markets. So I'm a trader and we had money on FTX professionally. And we lost it for quite some time until we eventually got it back at, I think, 90 cents on the dollar around that sort of time, but that sort of triggered the entire thing about Rails, because, you know, having built like a DEX on Stellar back in the day because we wanted speed and stuff. So one of the things at that point sort of that got to me was, what does the next gen sort of exchange look like, right? And yeah. and as a builder, as a software engineer, you always think about the tech stacks you put together to build a product. Mm-hmm. What I'd realized is, as you sort of scale up, like on matching, it's got to be centralized. Decentralized matching will never scale up at the same speed as centralized matching will scale up. And I think that's one of the benefits of using obviously Binance and FTX and stuff like that. And if you use DEXs and they actually truly become decentralized, they just cannot perform as fast. So they all start off this sort of like centralized, claiming to be decentralized, but we know they're not decentralized. And when they do, they get unusable over time. So that was one of the theses behind sort of the central matching and all of that. The other one was, how do you sort of keep people's funds safe? And that's where I think crypto, the tech stack, is mm-hmm. more important than crypto, the philosophy, when it comes to building this product for us. So the tech stack being on-chain custody, with the L2s, you know, it's readable, it's viewable, it's transparent, and you can have a central system talking to a decentralized system using cryptography. That's sort of like the bridge that builds the two together. And then you have both pieces of the tech stack building a newer sort of base product. And we've now been live. We spent 2 years building it. We went live 120 days ago, 100 days ago. And wow. We've done $2 billion in volume, over 500K in fees. So we're very new. A lot of people haven't heard about us. They probably won't hear about us. I think the average age before you hear about an exchange is around 12 to 13 months. And oh. And the other big portion of what we're doing is we're fully compliant. So we have we're licensed. We have we're registered with CIMA, which is the Cayman International Monetary Authority. We're registered with them. We're actively working with the CFTC. So I think that, you know, the period we're in right now, you have this like what they call crime season in crypto. It's very common on crypto Twitter. It's a deregulatory phase that. That sort of like sparks the whole, like, you know, we're going to be non-regulated, which I think where a lot of people are confusing deregulation with no regulation. I think what's going to happen is there are going to be frameworks in place. Everyone's going to follow the rules. I don't see a world where TradFi has its own set of rules and crypto has its own set of rules, given that now converging big time. So that's sort of like, so you put those three together and I think you have what we have, the pieces of an exchange that can last into the long term. Outside the whole sort of like purely DEX thing.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at afani.com/crypto101. That's afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number. So make sure it's protected with Afani. All right, Crypt Nation fam, are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? Because I know I am. The Bitcoin credit card by Gemini earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it like any credit card. You buy lunch, you get gas, any of your weekly grocery expenses, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or
one of over 50 other cryptos straight into your account. All that with no annual fee. And right now, you can grab $200 of Bitcoin. That's right, a $200 Bitcoin welcome bonus with the Gemini credit card. It is the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, it totally makes a ton of sense. And you're going to be the perfect guy to talk to about some of these upcoming things with the Clarity Act and how that sort of segments the market. And I love to hear that you're building sort of this decentralized protocol, but still going with, under certain regulatory authorities is in order to get as big as distribution as possible. And to get that far distribution, that wide reach, I notice you guys have some really interesting folks on your investor and partner list, names like Kraken, which is one of the largest exchanges in the world, Flowdesk, which is one of the largest market makers and OTC counterparties, Slow Ventures, which is one of the best venture capital firms. Tell us a little bit about working with folks like this, and did they help you guys ideate the product? You know, kind of where do they all sit with you?
So we before we approached them, right, we had been building, my co-founder and I had been building Rails in like a prototype-y version. We sort of wanted to see how the two work together. And I think what I've learned is, you know, when you go and fundraise for a brand new product, at a certain point, the best way for the market to tell you if it's good or not is to actually go and pitch and see to people who actually invest all the time in these things. And I think the feedback we got was very sound and solid. I know our first round, we closed it in about a couple of weeks. It was very quick. And then our second one, almost like 3 weeks, I think. So in total, we've raised $20 million over these last 2 years, and we're building.
I think the whole idea of a hybrid exchange model, which is, you know, exactly what this is really interesting. And we're seeing more and more from this because it's like you said, and again, for the listeners, I want to reiterate this. You get the speed of the centralized part, and then you get the security of the decentralized aspect. And it's combining the best of both worlds. And it's almost amazing that we haven't done something like this sooner. Like, why wasn't this just like something that was like mainstream like 5 years ago, 10 years ago? And it's always like easy looking back on it being like, well, this is so obvious. It was right in front of our eyes. And now it's coming out and we're like, well, duh, like we should have done this. So I do think it's genius. And again, it's really cool that this is coming out. But I've seen that other exchanges have started kind of looking in this direction as well. And in slightly different ways. I know the big one that sticks out to me is Coinbase, right? They've always been a centralized exchange first, and now they've started trying to add different kinds of decentralized aspects into their exchange. Like, I know the big one that's coming up is they're going to be adding Aerodrome so that people inside of their Coinbase account can trade through a DEX. They also have Coinbase Wallet now, and then they have the base layer too. And so they're saying, hey, people can, in a very centralized way with all the centralized support, interact with all of DeFi and still utilize that. So it's interesting. I mean, do you view that as a competitor now since they're trying to get more into the decentralized side of things? Or do you still think that you guys operate in two fairly different ways?
Yeah, I think you know, that's a good question. And I've been thinking about this for a while, like why hasn't this been done before? And I think part of it is because crypto is very, very philosophical by culture and by industry. So I think the entire thesis behind crypto for a long time has been decentralized everything. And that's what a lot of people have operated on that basis. And for us, it's really been it's just another layer of tech that we can build together to combine a new product. So I'm not on the replacement sort of mindset that we have to replace everything centralized with everything decentralized. It's more what pieces of tech work to build another product. Now, regardless of which way you go, exchanges in the long run, their success depends on liquidity and volume. Those are the two most important metrics. And they're very hard to do when you're starting a new exchange. So getting those things together is very difficult, especially if you want to be compliant. So one of the reasons why DEXs are very popular is because you have these like big vaults that are built up that the exchanges tend to be the counterparties themselves. So they market make with those funds and their user funds, like you see on Hyperliquid or you see on other ones. And when you sort of talk to regulators or CradFi, it almost becomes like, you can't do that. It's not allowed in the real world. So we have to have organic market makers that take this. So that part makes, so it's easier to scale liquidity if you're decentralized, in my opinion, because you have all these tricks up your sleeve. And we sort of tried that when we did our beta testing, and we had something called Rails Play, where we just to sort of test the speed of the engine and stuff, we were the market makers. It was all fake money and stuff, but we could run insane volume numbers. Like we were running hundreds of billions of volume numbers because we provided infinite liquidity to our traders. And now when you're doing actual Rails, where you have real market makers, the volumes are much lower. They're much more normal. And sort of growing those volumes organically is much more difficult. But that's sort of the path we're taking by going this route.
And does Rails allow us to like access liquidity throughout all the different sort of liquidity pools on Uniswap or Radium? Is it cross-chain? Tell us a little bit about the architecture, or is this, all the liquidity that's on Rails is just, you know, it's on Rails?
Yeah, it's whatever's on Rails is on Rails. So it's okay. Very sort of like secure like that. And it's built sort of to follow the TradFi model, where you would have market makers being a separate function. They provide liquidity. We don't do any partaking in any of that. There's just no conflict of interest. So when you're sort of building a more regulated product, you have to think about all of these things. And and we have a lot of that in our thought process. But what happens is when we talk to institutions, for example, which we have good relationships with, they all want to work with a regulated entity. So because they are regulated themselves. So it's very hard for them to justify going and doing decentralized trading because they don't know who the counterparty on the other side of the trade is. Is there any money laundering happening? So I think when you look at us in the long run, we're sort of building for that sort of that trust factor as a long-running institution.
And I was going to ask on that. I wanted to double click on sort of this compliance aspect or the regulation aspect of Rails. What does it mean for a DEX to be compliant and regulated? And what does it mean for it to be unregulated maybe as well?
So on our side, so we'll never call ourselves a DEX because we're not that. Our entire matching is fully centralized. It's only our custody that's on chain. So for us, it's the entire thing. We have KYC, KYB, KYT. So we have wallet screening. You cannot use Rails without any of those things. In today's sort of cycle, these are massive friction points because everyone can just go put up a VPN, connect your wallet and start trading, which of course, as a user, it's much easier to get liquidity. So that's one of the reasons why the DEXs have a much easier time sort of increasing liquidity. But what we're going to see, and my thesis is both as a trader and as the person sort of like creating the vision behind Rails, is that eventually you're going to have a massive clampdown on regulation. It's going to happen. It's a matter of when, not if. Even if there's a nice set of rules, I think the rules will be very closely mirroring what happens in TradFi, which has all these rules. So I don't think you're going to go and ask banks or hedge funds to remove all forms of regulation to trade. So I think we're going to have to follow that rule. And that's sort of what we're building for. So I think at the moment when that sort of capitalizes in the market, that'll be our moment to sort of take off. And you'll see on the DEX side, sort of that come down.
I'm curious. We've seen a lot of regulatory changes. We know that there's been policy changes, especially in the United States, towards the crypto market. But you get a unique perspective here where you get firsthand experience, you're a relatively new exchange coming out, and you get to work with, you know, the new administration, the CFTC, after a lot of this is kind of eased up. What has your experience been like working with the CFTC and the US government?
So any discussion we've had with regulators always comes down to how compliant are you? What are you doing to protect your users? And I think that's been the case right now. It's also been the case back in like 2018, 2019, where we talked to regulators back then when we were like, when our exchange got sort of bought out. So I think what they're looking to do from my perspective is create this guideline of rules that allow you to sort of operate under these guidelines of rules. And I don't think it's this like, if you're fully decentralized, you're completely fine. I think you have to prove you're fully decentralized if you're completely fine. So I think that it's almost like what I'm seeing now is that there's this middle ground before the rule set is in, and that's why it's pretty wild. And I think after that, there's going to be a big sort of change. So I still hear the same thing around user protection. The questions are pretty stringent. It's not loose. It's like people think it is. There's a lot of thinking behind regulation, which there should be. And I realize that it's a tough process. Like our work with SEMA took us 9 months to get the license, and we built that as a part of starting the startup. So it takes time. But I think that they are coming, and the rule set's going to be there. I expect them to be strong.
Yeah, I was going to ask, kind of like stemming from that, do you feel like it's looser or clearer? And you kind of answered that and you said, well, it's not like it's loose, but I'm getting the feel from what you're saying that it just seems like it's clearer. They're like, here are the guidelines, here's what we're expecting, follow this, stay compliant. And that's what it's sounding right. Right.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I think one of the things is that there's a lot of confusion around. You see, the problem with crypto right now is that it's tied to this political spectrum that's running. So you had this extremely strong anti-crypto sentiment before the new administration kicked in, and you saw what sort of happened then, right? Like the industry was almost about to get decimated, and then you come back and you get this revival. And now it's everyone sort of switched on the other side, where it's like now it's sort of up only forever, and we're going to be able to do all the wild things we've been doing for many years. And I think what you do is you eventually land right in the center of both of them, and that means there's rules. Here's the rule set, and I wouldn't be surprised to see ask them that either prove you're fully decentralized or add KYC or KYB to your products. So I think. The approach we've taken is we expect the rules to be there. So we just want to build with the expectation that rules will be there.
Do you think that there are stricter towards certain areas of crypto? Like my idea is, are they stricter towards listing a bunch of different altcoins, or are they stricter against perpetuals contracts, or are they stricter against futures contracts or custody, or like, I'm just curious kind of to get my perspective, because for the longest time, it was like absolutely no leverage of any kind in the United States. People would try to VPN to get around it and stuff, but these centralized regulated exchanges could never offer all these different kinds of leverage. And now it seems like that's easing up, where like even all the big dogs are opening the doors to perps and futures and all these other things. But like, do you feel like there are different areas that have different levels of like barriers still?
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. So how my observation of the entire thing is, before now, regulators didn't care. They're like, crypto's bad, we're going to destroy it. Like, it doesn't need to exist. Like, I think that was, and I think everyone was on board with them. They understood that's the message. So there's no reason to try to understand how it works, what happens, all of that stuff. Now you have sort of like an administration place that is like, no, we got to make crypto work for everyone, figure out the rule set. And what you're having is, okay, now we need to learn how it works. So we need to know what are perps? How do they work? How are they different from futures contracts? Like, what's so right now with Coinbase, you have these futures contracts that are sort of like tied in little like baskets together. They're not really a real actual perp like you trade on any other actual perp thing. So they're basically modified futures contracts. And I think what they're trying to learn is, how does a perp work? How should we regulate it? Like, what is on-chain custody? Like, how does that work? Like, so right now you have a very open mind on learning how stuff works. But what you're seeing at the same time is everyone else is like, let's push the boundaries as far as we can. So they're like, we're just going to introduce this. It seems like the message we're getting is crypto is going to be regulated. It's allowed. So let's just go as far as we can. And I think what you're eventually going to get is like, no, let's go back in the center. This is allowed. This is not allowed. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And I'm curious, like, you know, as this next big piece of legislation, the Clarity Act, kind of comes through, Brennan, I liked your framing. It's not that it's making it easier, it's making it clearer.
Yes.
And I think the Clarity Act, it has that baked into the name. But I'm just curious, like, how does something like the Clarity Act impact your business? And do you see this unlocking, does it unlock trillions of dollars of capital that previously hasn't been able to access the market?
Yeah, I think any form of clarity is going to be a good place to see what the future looks like. So it's almost like the confirmation of a trade. You know, when you're actually trading, you think you're looking at momentum. And I think what it does is it solidifies the direction of the momentum. So one of the things is when these bills come into play and they're actually sort of signed into law and all of that stuff, then they just don't get changed that easily. But what I do think is that they set the groundworks for what it should be. And I think if you follow the regulatory path, you're generally going to be in a safer direction to build from there, versus if you're on the opposite side of it and you have to come back to it. So I think that's what I'm seeing and how this sort of plays out. And like you said, it's priced into the name. It's his Clarity Act. So that's what we're all hoping for. No one knows what exactly it's going to be, but it should be some sort of clear framework.
Yeah, no, that'll hopefully be something that happens within the next, within the next 6 months, I guess. Like I've heard people as optimistic as saying by the end of October, but who knows? Senate, Congress, they always are dragging their feet. But what else, you know, before we kind of move on to some other things that are going on in the market, what else about Rails have we failed to ask or failed to highlight that we really should have?
Yeah, I think the plan is how do you sort of compete with Hyperliquid, and that's always the question we get from almost everyone. Yeah. Because and I think one of the things I always say is, look, like I said in the past, when you hear about stuff, it's already sort of been there for like 12, 13, 14 months. You need time to let things cook. We're in our early phases of that. We're 3 months in. Our volume, our numbers are decent. There obviously we have so much work to do. But I think what we're waiting for is that convergence of regulatory clarity with like sort of product maturation. We have a lot of interesting products coming in the space around prop. We should probably be live by the time this sort of goes up. So we have inbuilt prop into the exchange. We're working on institutionalized vaults where the vaults have their vaults, but we don't market make. They're given to professional market makers. So I think the better answer to that question is how do we compete is, well, let's give it some time and see how that works out.
Yeah, makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
It was funny about the hype thing. It's like, how do you compete with hype? I saw recently Binance Chain launched something called Aster.
Aster, yes.
Yeah, they're trying to compete. So I guess you just have to launch a token and then you could compete. Do you have any plans to launch a token for Rails?
We do. It's coming out in December.
Oh, nice.
But we're trying to build a lot of utility into our token. Like I said, we're taking a conservative path on it. You needed to buy evaluations for props so you can try those out before you get a funded account on Rails. And then the general stuff around, like, you know, saving fees and stuff like that. So we're thinking about all of those things. It is important. We're revenue generating already, so we want to see a way to give that back to revenue. I think that's a big meta going forward. Is like if you're a revenue generating crypto company, a token is very valuable for ways to sort of. And I think a lot of clarity around tokenization is something I'm very interested in and how that sort of works out, because I think that's sort of the big unlock for crypto. Right? It's like a lot of the tokens have been pointless, like just culture sort of like hype tokens where you just trade meme coins because it's like the easiest thing to trade now. Back then you needed a white paper. I remember in 2017 you got the white papers and you read the Golem white paper and you went immediately long because this is going to change the future of robotics and everything.
And that then was before ChatGPT was even
exactly,
writing white papers.
Exactly. I mean, it took some effort to write white papers then. Now exactly. It's like you don't even need white paper. Just make a meme coin and get it on Murad's list and you're good to go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the scammers of 2017 were really a lot tougher than the scammers today.
Yes, it's gotten too easy, which means that it's going to be a lot harder to be successful.
Yeah, that's a funny point. That's a funny point, man.
You know, along those lines, I don't want to derail us too much, but going back to Aster, I don't know if you all have seen the memes, but Mr. Beast, the largest YouTuber in the world, has been trading crypto quite a bit more recently. And people have been saying that he's like the topping indicator for everything. And so he did
buy the top, I think.
Yeah, he bought the top and everyone's like, sell it off. And all my whole Twitter feed yesterday was just about how Mr. Beast is the topping signal. And he topped out and made Aster start turning around and all this stuff. So I didn't know if you all had seen those memes recently.
Yeah. I always follow new stuff that comes out. So it's been pretty interesting. Yeah.
So all I'm going to say is if you do make a token in the future, just make sure that you blacklist Mr. Beast anytime.
that's why you have to KYC and stuff. So
exactly. But all right, bringing us back on track. You know, you had some pretty big claims here that I want to talk about. I think we have to talk about them with the size. But you mentioned this idea that Bitcoin will reach 300 to 500K.
Yeah.
And you've credited this mainly due to the ballooning of the Fed's balance sheet and lower interest rates. My question is, I guess, number one, statement, can you explain this a little bit more? But also, two, is this like an end of year prediction, an end of cycle prediction?
I think what I'm seeing, like my thesis for this is a bit of a long term prediction. And it's almost always sort of follows that route. My end of year is I'm still bullish into the end of the year. I think 140, maybe 180, 200 is possible. I think that's where I'm leaning. I think we probably have a really brutal shakeout before then, which seems to be going on right now. and probably shakes out people a lot deeper than they think they'll get shaken out. And probably that rebounds back a lot faster than people. So I think big moves always leave a lot of people sidelined, and it's the catch up that creates the momentum on the trade. So that's how these things tend to work. I think in the long run, I'm almost certain that we have Bitcoin at those prices. And it's pretty, I think, you know, in a long enough time frame, fiat becomes more worthless. It's sort of proven time and time again. No one has any interest in reducing debt. We just got to keep increasing, keep printing, and eventually it's the straw that breaks the camel's back, and real assets sort of begins to rise. And you're seeing that in gold early on, and I think you'll see Bitcoin catch up to that eventually. I think Bitcoin tends to lead the market movements first. So if it sort of corrects first, it's sort of signaling everything else going to correct after. So I think the stock market is also due for a bit of a pullback, and crypto tends to be the first one to do that. And then it tends to be the first one out of the gates as well. So I think that's sort of what you're seeing right now. So yes, but I think in the long enough time frame, I think I'm not the only one. I think people have even wilder price valuations than I do. But I think that's where it's headed. Remember, it is digital gold, right? Like it is accepted digital gold. It's the easiest way to move money across the internet. You don't have to carry gold bars. You don't have to sort of. You can move it with you. It's really strong hardcore money, and I think that it stands its place at that sort of level.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, yeah, $300 to $500K for Bitcoin seems pretty reasonable. I saw Larry Fink projected potentially as high as 700,000. Yep. And yeah, Michael Saylor, like $13 million per token by 2045. But in this world where it's like basically like this thesis of, you know, just monetary debasement from governments, from central banks, where does that leave altcoins? Because there's always this big debate of all of that money is going to go into, you know, Bitcoin, and then Ethereum and Solana and the list of altcoins isn't going to see any of that. But we could just see empirically that's not true. Ever since Ethereum launched, it's outperformed Bitcoin. Do you think that there's a world in which altcoins will thrive, or do you really think that this whole play comes back just to Bitcoin and Bitcoin only?
So I always say that when Bitcoin goes that high, the world is going to be in a lot of trouble.
Okay.
And it's not going to be this favorable bull market that everyone's excited about. It's almost signaling that there's bad things happening. You almost don't want Bitcoin to go that high so fast. You want it to sort of take its time, because it signals that things are really bad. people have lost a lot of value in their fiat. Asset inflation will be all-time highs. So that's what happens with monetary debasement. And I think that a select few obviously make a lot on that thing. And that's why crypto gives everyone the opportunity to sort of get in. But yeah, I think it's limited to Bitcoin. I just don't see this the same sort of effect going on all altcoins. I think that is a lot more like, there are a lot more like tech products. So right now you have like this this artificial sort of push around with DATs. So when you have big buyers sort of coming in, buying up big chunks of the supply and sort of pushing the price up, that's unnatural. I think over the long run, the DATs are going to be responsible for basically the capitulation on crypto side. And I think what builds great altcoins of the future, obviously regulation is going to matter. So do they make it legal for tokens to provide revenue back to holders? Like, is there a framework for that to do that legally? And if so, it comes back to building a great product that makes revenue, and that revenue can be dispersed back to users. And I think you're beginning to see that with like Pump.fun and all these other ones that are actually outperforming over sort of the short run, is there's some way or form giving the value back to the token holders. They're just not empty tokens. And I think those ones are just, they'll have very short-lived cycles before they're out.
Yeah. Do you think that altcoins, say in Q4, you know, as we're kind of here in Q4 approaching it, do you think altcoins will outperform Bitcoin in Q4? Or do you think it's Bitcoin dominance is going to rebound?
Well, to have what they want, they call an alt season, which I don't think is the same thing as an alt season. In the greatest alt season was in 2017, and I think then after that, 2021. Because we had a very small group of things to buy, so everyone's capital concentrated on a few things. And then 2021, you had money was basically free. So everyone was buying everything. Now you won't have the case, just too much fragmentation. So there's going to be a movement in some that are what you'd call cycle darlings, like people that the newer narratives, like you'll be looking at stuff like Athena, you'll be looking at Pump.fun, like stuff, obviously the ones that have DAT flows, ETH, Sol, all of that stuff. But Hyperliquid as well. But I think it doesn't apply to all. So I have a hard time seeing us having like a major alt season. I just don't think that's possible. you'd need to have interest rates back down to almost zero for that to happen. But if you want to have any form of like our concentrated group of alts performing very well, you need to have a Bitcoin dominance run once more. Like, it needs to be led by Bitcoin. So what you really want to see is the next leg up, if there is a leg up, be Bitcoin solely, like everything else getting decimated against Bitcoin. And Bitcoin dominance making a big run September, October. Because if that happens and Bitcoin sort of tops in that like 140, 160 sort of range that I talk about, then I think you're going to have a really good like sort of like for select altcoins, a huge time-bound outperformance against Bitcoin.
Okay, I like it. Brendan, does that sit well with you? Or do you feel like that might be a top coming in here pretty quickly for altcoins?
Well, it raises a good question, and it's something that I've talked about. I mean, you look on CoinMarketCap, they have over, I think, 20 million cryptos that they have listed, and it has ballooned so exponentially in recent years, and it kind of raises this idea, because you look at the equities market, and then there's listing factors, and you can't just have like infinite companies. Not anyone can just go and get publicly listed. There's criteria and stuff that you have to fill out. Whereas crypto, it's a little bit different. And I think that's part of crypto's core values, is the idea that anyone can go and create this, and they have the right to, and they have the freedom to. But you raise a really good question about infinite fragmentation, right? Because you're almost infinitely diluting the market with new projects. And then what you do is people and their liquidity are going to all these different crypto projects. And you made a good point. Like, when you look at 2017, I think the reason why that was such a great run is because people mainly at most had a few hundred cryptos to really put their money into.
Yeah.
And so when the market went up, everyone's liquidity, everyone's capital was concentrated into just those cryptos. So not only did A, everyone see upside, but B, the upside was greater because it was not divided as much. And that got me really thinking. I mean, now that we have 20 plus million that are at least like categorically listed. There's definitely more than that. Does that limit altcoin seasons moving forward? Because historically, we've seen Bitcoin dominance range from 40% on the low end, roughly, to around 70% on the high end since 2017. It does make me kind of second think this process of, like, could things have changed because of those factors that we just talked about? And I think it's worth, like, a real thought. My initial thought was, I think to some degree it has, right? Because we have seen
That's what Satraj said earlier. I mean, he said that exact same thing, that basically because of this fragmentation, he kind of thinks the altcoin season's a myth. But is it altcoin season that's a myth, the altcoin season that we, you know, the 2017, 2021, or is it just that we need to watch altcoins manifest strength in a different way? Like, what should we really be looking out for?
So I think what's very different now is that you can clearly see altcoins just do not hold their gains anymore. So you cannot not be in that sort of like, I'm going to hold this forever and I'm going to make a ton of money. Like, you know, you got in early into Solana or you got early into Ethereum, you sort of do that. I think that's sort of done, especially with your altcoins. You really have to be a trader in the space and catch the narrative. So you have short-lived cycles where you'll get a big move and then you need to get out. So that's sort of how I've been approaching altcoins for over the last 2 years, and that sort of it's paid big dividends, right? Like, because you kind of realize that there's just too many choices, and we actually are living in a world where attention span is now very small. So you think about the fact that people go on to social media and you have their favorite influencer shilling something brand new. They've made some gains on something. They just want to rotate. There's no reason to hold anything. So I think you're combining, like, with peak sort of like social media hysteria where you're getting stuff thrown at you so fast, so hard, which also didn't exist in 2017, by the way, or thing. Like, this is, we're living in this time where our attention is so divided. The fragmentation is going to infinity. You combine the two things together, there's just nothing able to hold gains unless it's really got like mental market share. And that's now stuff where, like, Bitcoin, obviously, massive mental market share. It's accepted, it's known. But who's piling into Bitcoin? It's no longer the individuals. It's the big balance sheet. So it's like institutions are having their 2017 moment now because they have a select few that they can pile into. That's why those things are going up way higher. Crypto is just, it's way too fragmented and it needs to find its equilibrium. And I think that's going to take some time. And I think regulations are going to play a big part in that. So what these acts like the Clarity Act define, they define the narratives around where people should invest their money what stuff that should. So I think once we have a really good sort of like framework for tokenization, then you're going to be able to sort of do this like cash flow based discounting model on what a token should be worth now over 5 years as the revenue begins to rise. How much will the tokens get? And I think we're basically converging with TradFi even on our modeling now. On things. So I think we're out of this entire like it's going to go up forever because it's crypto. I think that's done. And I'm actually on a macro firm. I'm very bearish. I think we may have maybe one more push up before we get a massive like closure on the cycle.
Okay.
Go
for it.
I was gonna say, what is that? Like, what is a massive closure on the cycle? Is that a 10% move, a 40% move?
I would say you're talking about 40-50% move even on Bitcoin. So if we go up to like 140 to 180, I still see like a 40-60% move down, because I think what you're gonna have is all the DATs sort of like being trading well under their NAV, and I think they're eventually just going to have to sell what they bought.
So you think that this sort of Michael Saylor, MicroStrategy, plus all the other guys who followed in his footsteps, who have been kind of issuing debt and issuing equity in order to buy Bitcoin, that at some point that's going to unravel, and that might be what causes the Bitcoin bear market. And now Ethereum's doing it with SBET, BMNR, Solana's doing it. Bold take. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't happen. It would be great to see, you know, some good actors doing this in a responsible way. Hopefully they're doing it in a way that won't be ultra over leveraged. And I feel like, I don't know if I misread in my research and stuff, but I want to see if you had the Saylor effect in regards to Ethereum, talking about how Ethereum might be as high as $7,000. Is that right? Am I misreading?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about this then.
So what I think is that if the market was to turn now and go back to like 90K and 80K, then obviously it's just an extended cycle. So it's not done. It's just, we haven't had too strong a move up to be able to call it like it's over. So I think then you're just having a long raging sort of market. You have interest rates come down. That fuels up that last push up. So I still think that in one way or form, you're going to build up towards a very big push up. And that would be basically the cycle top or what you call the end. So that's how I'm seeing it. I think we're towards the end, not the beginning. Definitely. Remember, like from the round 13 side, like I put in our first money at the end of 2022. And for me, that has been the trade since 2022. So I'm coming towards the end of these trades in a sense, like this, that's when the beginning of the bull market started actually. So we're now coming towards the last piece. But the last piece is always the most explosive. And that tends to be across all markets, across all industries. So that's the part I think is missing right now. And there's way too many people bearish for like a real strong top to be in. Like you just do not see that when tops begin to form. I think every bear becomes a bull at the top of the market, and that's sort of what you're looking for. And I see too much skepticism and negative sentiment way too early. And I think that's part of the attention sort of thing I'm talking about, because information so quick and fast to us. So on social media, someone becomes bearish, everyone becomes bearish. Like it moves very fast. And I think that's the big difference now that makes trading a little bit more difficult, is the fact that information is moving way too fast.
Yeah, Satraj, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I think you're exactly right. I know looking at my timeline on Twitter or X, like every time there's a big sell-off, like the whole market gets super bearish. Nobody's trying to buy the dip. Like everybody's pretty pessimistic still. So I think that's a good sign that there's still some room for higher prices. It might be the pain trade might first be Bitcoin higher without altcoins. And then everybody FOMOs into Bitcoin because like, screw it. I'm going to sell my altcoins. They're not doing anything. And at that moment, bam, that's when you sort of get that final rip.
Yeah. Historically, if you look at the markets, they get hammered, but they all, as soon as Bitcoin rises and tops, they all go crazy. So what you're really looking to do right now is to be very selective with your positioning, entering. You never want to be knife catching, but you want to be looking for Bitcoin too. So what happens is Bitcoin goes down, also get crushed. Bitcoin goes up, also get crushed more. And what you're you want to be watching how Bitcoin behaves more than anything else, because that's sort of like your general sentiment around how things are going to change. Watch the big flows from TradFi. That's been the entire driver of the cycle.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like determines how, and they still keep buying. So that makes you feel like they're the big dip buyers in the space.
Yeah. Watch those passive ETF flows.
Yeah.
It's certainly something that's going to, kind of hopefully keep the market going. I know when we talk to folks that advise these ETFs and advise wealth managers, they say, there's such a small amount of wealth advisors that are onboarded with these ETFs, and slow but surely that spigot's coming on. So I liked what you said earlier, just to kind of like put a point on the conversation. The first 20% of the trend and the last 20% of the trend are always the most dangerous.
Yes.
And then like, that nice middle 60% is where you make all your money. Cause buying the exact bottom, like during FTX, like that's a super dangerous exercise, but it's the most, rewarding. And selling during the market euphoria and peak when everybody wants to be a buyer, like that's also a scary, dangerous exercise. But, if you could kind of capture the middle, you're going to be
yeah, that's shape. Those are your entry points, right? So those are the entry points and I think it's always good to watch momentum, because they're like with Aster, if you played it well over the last 2 days, you would have made a killing. Like you can see the narrative, and you can sort of see how quickly it spreads on social media. Like following, that's coming something I've sort of trained myself on doing, is every night I sit and just read crypto Twitter for like 30 minutes just to gauge sentiment. Like it gets me understanding where people's mind space is. Mm-hmm. And I think they become a, when you put them in a big sphere, it becomes a really good counter trend signal for you to sort of trade, because then you realize who's offside, who's not offside, how sidelined everyone is, how not they are. So it looks like everyone was very long, very excited, and right now everyone's like liquidated. So we're setting up for so now you want everyone getting ready to short the crap out of everything, and once everyone is shorting, then the market just moves completely against catching everyone offside.
Well, I know we've talked about how you're a little bit skeptical about the altcoin market. Are there any that you aren't? Are there any that you like back? And you're saying, hey, you know, I really do like these. Because my kind of take on altcoins is that, well, I don't believe we're going to have an altcoin season where every single altcoin all goes up like that 2017 run. I do think we're going to have periods where we have altcoins performing quite well.
Yep.
And the way that I look at this is that you just have to be more aware of what's going on, and you have to kind of be a picker and a chooser. So, you know, I guess for my question to you, are there altcoins that stand out to you? And you're like, no, there are like really good altcoin projects that can have a lot of upside. Do those still exist?
So for us, I can tell you on the fund side what we're positioned in. So we started with so if I sort of run this over 2 years, Bitcoin was obviously the core, and our two big gainers have been Bitcoin and Solana. That was like the early. We got excellent entries on Bitcoin, got excellent entries on Solana. I think Solana, we entered around 20 to 24 bucks. Like that was when we and started sort of riding that up, coming in, coming out through that thing. I'm very positioned very similarly going into this thing now. So what do I see next? Bitcoin, Solana, and then altcoins. The one that we do like is Athena. Fundamentally, Athena is growing pretty strong. It has this nice sort of like flywheel. It's got obviously the DAT. They do the big buybacks, but also it's got fundamental value. As the interest rate goes down, it's still the most strongest yield bearing stablecoin because it has, you know, the long short sort of like thing, but it also has the treasury on it. So it looks very like a very sensible fundamental crypto project to play in, and that's something we are. I'm obviously monitoring pump.fun. It's sort of interesting. It fell down over the last few days because it made less revenue. So it seems to be trading against how much it can buy back, which is very interesting. But I think if you have any form of meme coin rebounds, I think pump.fun will be a great buy. I think at revenue and its holding, it's probably underpriced relative to what it should be in the market. So that's an interesting one. And then just looking forward to like new, like I think Aster definitely has some legs behind whether it works well or not. It is a competitor to Hyperliquid. It does have the Binance blessing. And at the end of the day, it's going to have the reputation of like, you know, CZ and what BNB has, how that has performed and somewhere form. Like, I think it's, isn't it wholly owned by Binance, if I'm not wrong?
I think like, so, like 95% of it.
So it's you have a hard time seeing that's not a good project to sort of make a bet on, to sort of capture some value from Hyperliquid. So that's sort of like, that's an interesting one. So I like those three.
I like it. Those are some hot, fresh picks for the community. I think of those, full disclosure, our fund owns Pump. So we've got some exposure there. I share your same bullishness. I think that it's valued at like a seventh of Hyperliquid, but does like more revenue and puts all that revenue towards buying back these tokens. And so I'm super optimistic there. We have some small exposure to Hype, but none to Aster. I missed the boat on that one. So maybe I'll dive into that a little bit later.
Well, now if it corrects, what did CZ say in his last tweet, that all the dips are like a like the foundation of a house? They're like that. So I would say the dips on Aster, they're probably going to be pretty wild, but they're probably good. Like anything under a buck is for us, we'll be looking to allocate there.
I like that. Yeah. Well, Satraj, this was incredible. I wish we could go longer. I hope you are able to come back onto the show at some point here in the future to talk more about Rails, talk more about round 13, and any other things that your market musings and machinations. We would love to have you air them out here on the Crypto 101 podcast. But until next time, we hope you have a great rest of your month here. We hope you guys successfully build into Q4, catch some dips. And we hope you have just a tremendous success.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun.
Absolutely. Everybody at home listening, thank you so much for joining. We hope you come back. Same time, same place next week. We're going to have some more incredible high caliber guests for you today. All right, Brendan, take care. Everybody home, have fun.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
From unsolved mysteries to unexplained phenomena, from comedy gold to relationship fails, Amazon Music's got the most ad-free top podcasts, included with Prime. Download the Amazon Music app today.